extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Weavy with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr. Happy Monday, boys. It's only been, I don't know, like 10 hours since I've seen you. If you don't know.
Less.
Yeah, less than that? Yeah.
I think so. It's in a tight turnaround.
Oh, it's deja vu. I'm literally wearing the same thing. So that's the way it goes here. With the Gold Cup rolling, we are in action overtime. So Sunday night after the U.S. won 1-0 in a quarterfinal to move on to a semi against Qatar. We did a whole postgame show. We reacted to it. So we won't be talking about that on today's show. It's just MLS. Nothing but it. Just Ricardo Pepi wearing cowboy hats, Kanye West living in Mercedes-Benz, all the important stuff.
Just the normal Major League stuff.
Soccer. Yeah, just routine. How you feeling, Kalen? You good to be back?
Yeah,
good to be back in the mix?
Yeah, I went to an MLS wedding in Lisbon, Portugal. Former.
Can we guess? Are we allowed to guess?
No, this is a deep cut. You won't get this. This is like,
okay.
You gotta know.
What show do you think this is? Disrespect.
Super Dude, Draft this, pick or no?
I mean, yeah. If anybody would get it, it would be on this show. But
Hints.
Super Draft
from,
pick
you'd
or
have
no?
to know from the Chivas USA roster, which is always a good place to start. And it would be, I believe, between the years of maybe 2011? No, before
Ooh,
that,
be
actually.
There.
Before that. Was Chivas still around? I mean, the Chivas years all kind of blend together. But anyways, no, it was a guy, Desmond Brooks, awesome guy. And then his wife played soccer at Alabama. So it was all soccer people and some other sort of MLS dignitaries in attendance. So it was fun. Wow. I listened to the podcast.
MLS black tie.
There you go.
Just
I listened to
Lisbon.
The podcast on the way back where you guys did the U.S. national team and the MLS game. And it got like really bizarre by the end, which I kind of enjoyed. and I was like, oh, good. We split it up this week. So it'll be one and then the other. But like now I barely slept and I'm jet lagged. So maybe it'll get weird in a little bit of a different way today.
Well, we've started out guessing a random MLS player's wedding in Portugal. So I think we've hit the ground.
Yeah. Hit Chivas USA.
Did you
the
know?
Honors is in the chat saying Matt Fondy, so you know.
Oh,
there.
That's a good guess. Yeah, I actually guest played for Chivas USA while I was under contract with Chicago Fire. I went to Mexico and played for Chivas. It's one of the most distinguished. It's not on my Wikipedia, but it is one of my prouder moments.
Update that wiki.
We got Someone a 1-1 draw home. Against Chivas Guadalajara. I drew a penalty in. What is their old stadium there? I don't know. But it was a wild scene, really fun.
Estadio Jalisco.
Yeah, and like we went out afterwards and partied in Mexico. It was a good time.
So somewhere
that's how I got invited
wall.
To this wedding.
Out of frame here is obviously that Chivas USA frame jersey, right? Just like outside frame a little bit.
I didn't get to keep
wall.
My kit, but I wish I would have. Yeah.
What do you mean you didn't get to keep
kit.
Your kit?
Yeah, if somebody's got like an old goat's kit, I want to put my name on the back. Let's do
this. That's Chivas USA days right there. You play for them, guest play, go to Mexico. You can't even keep the kit. They're taking it
off
your back.
I love that MLS players were
whistle.
Just like, I didn't think I saw any paperwork. I just like got on a plane. I just went and played.
Oh, man. That's a story for another day. Coming up, of course, we teased it. Kanye's living in Mercedes-Benz. I don't know what the hell that means, but we'll try to figure that part out. It did not help Atlanta United. Had a huge crowd, had a lot of expectations, had Joseph Martinez in the starting lineup. We're not able to knock off the Columbus Crew. But Caleb Porter wants respect. And he wants everyone to know that some people might not be watching the games. And we don't like that. So we'll talk about that. Huge win for Sporting Kansas City. Go to Seattle, win that game. NYCFC, 5-0 on Orlando. And then, you know, look, the Shield standings have changed. New England are on top. That's big. And we're going to talk Timbers, too. Over at MLSsoccer.com, Ari Lilienwall, 3 takeaways from the SKC win. We got the U.S. and Canada player ratings. Charlie Bohm had takeaways on U.S. Canada as well. There's good stuff there for you. Go check it out. Shout out, though, to the winner of our Extra Time Fantasy League, Baldy Eagles, 127 points on the double game week. Captain Carlos Heal, always a good choice on that one. Got 18 points off the bench from Jonathan Mensah, who scored the winner.
Doyle, Baldy Eagles, is that you or is that me?
I think that's just a big... Michael Baldissimo fan.
Oh,
that's what
nice.
That's what I assume. And it's not, and that could Wayne actually Rooney? That could actually be me.
Or me.
I am a huge Michael Baldissimo
I'm sorry.
Fan.
I'm a huge Michael Baldissimo. Okay,
I can't even recognize, I can't tell the difference between you two anymore. So just, if you would grow your beard out a little bit, Dave, it would just be like, I would not know who to throw it to here. Bonus though, you know, Baldy Eagle himself, Gringo Oso, right there.
nice
yeah.
segue.
Uh-huh, yeah, he's top 70 in our ETR league, and he got 1 point back of the Baldy Eagles. He
the key to that transition was now we all know somewhere in the world in about 15 hours, Ben's going to be so angry.
Yeah,
and that
sure.
makes me happy.
Just awaiting.
Wait, does
the
he not
chat.
Identify as bald? Because he's bald now.
It doesn't yeah. matter. You bring up his name, he's angry.
That's
yeah.
fair.
You yeah. bring up anything he's ever done, he's angry. He's
oh, hold on, hold he's on, hold man. On. Yeah.
Did you say the New York Mets? I own the New York Mets.
Oh, Jets segment coming up real soon. All right, let's hit it. It's our Celebrating Soccer Moment of the Weekend, presented by Continental Tire. The synergy here is incredible. Kanye West, or someone dressed exactly like Kanye West, dressed for the Donda listening party at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, went to the Atlanta United game with a bunch of bodyguards in tow. And now the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is reporting, and it's unconfirmed, but it seems true, that Kanye West is literally living at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the visitors' locker room. And this is as bizarre a thing as I've... Well, I don't know. There's a lot of bizarre things in this league, but this might be the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. Like, the most... timely mix-up of pop culture and MLS culture and, I don't know, stockings and all sorts of weird things. I don't know if it was Kanye. Do we think it's Kanye? Was yeah. that really Kanye?
He's you wearing can't see a his stocking face. Mask.
You can't yeah, see his wearing, face.
He's walking through the crowd with, like, I don't know if it's pantyhose or a stocking mask. It's the most bizarre. I mean,
wearing
he's got
a
like
puffer
this
jacket in puff, Atlanta in July.
All red puffer that he was wearing at the actual, I think, listening party. So I don't know if he showered.
Yeah, but
the auxiliary clothes. Locker room has to have showers in there. I imagine he
apparently it's luxurious. From
yeah, I heard he I've shipped
heard.
In a bed too. This is actually kind of relatable to me. I went down to Atlanta for like the pandemic, thinking I was going to be there for like 2 weeks, and ended up there 6 months. So I get it.
Yeah, Kalen actually lived in the home locker room just because that's more comfortable for him. But he allowed Kanye to use the visiting.
Kalen lived in his girlfriend's parents' basement. Let's I just did. Make sure that
and
Kalen lived in the 1970s.
I was also similarly dropping hot fire in a podcast. I didn't do the listening party at the Benz, but I tell you what, we could.
That was a mistake on your part.
Yeah.
You
Kalen refused
to
come out of that basement until the album was done.
I don't know. I don't know. Apparently, he has a recording studio that he's set up there as well.
Yeah, he's like refusing to leave, or not refusing to leave, but he's not leaving until he finishes the album. Apparently, they set up a private chef for him to run out of Mercedes-Benz. Everyone knows in the press box the soft serve ice cream at NAS is legendary. So he probably is hitting that up. I'm not an ice cream guy, really, so I can't attest to the quality, but people are very excited about it. So yeah, it was one of those moments. So it was him.
That's, I don't know. Like,
definitely.
You guys are old enough to remember Andy Kaufman a little bit, right? Like, his sidekick Bob Zamuda would show up, and like everybody would think it was Andy Kaufman, but it wasn't Andy Kaufman. It was it could very easily be something like that going on with Kanye. But then again, like, Kanye's been kind of off his rocker for it feels like a decade now. So it could very well just be this dude moved into Mercedes-Benz Stadium and is going to haunt that place like the Phantom of the Opera for the next 20 years.
He said he moved in, I think, because the vibes were good. And I'm like, the vibes are not good right now.
Like, I don't.
Well, that's
got
his
energy is all off right now.
No, everyone knows he's a Joseph guy, not a
I'm like, this guy
guys.
Does not have an athletic subscription. He does not understand.
He's got a re Felipe. He really does.
Exactly. That's what we need to break this nude. Where are you at, Felipe? Come on, man.
I will say I appreciate. This was like a few weeks ago when all of a sudden it came out that Brisson of FC Dallas was dating Selena Gomez, which was not true in any way. Mm-hmm. And I found out about these worlds of social media where people
accounts. I got to say, though, Brisson is one of the best looking players in Major League Soccer. So if someone could pull that off, he would be up top.
Aren't there
on that
multiple
list.
Selena also, Gomez MLS dating rumors going on here?
Yeah.
Our guy Demi also being rumored.
I don't know.
Accounts.
I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. Brisson came out about the Selena Gomez thing and said, I've never met her. I think he has a wife and kid as well. Yeah. So I think he's good. Yeah, but tough. beautiful man for sure. But I went in, I ended up in these deep seeds of the internet I didn't know existed. Same with this Kanye thing. There's accounts out there about potential photos of Kanye. That's the only reason the accounts exist. So yeah, good stuff.
Well, the best one is Kanye behind like two Atlanta United fans, just, and obviously we assume it's Kanye, but like mean mugging into the camera. This is, I don't know what to make of this other than I enjoy it immensely and I hope that Kanye sticks around.
I hope Kanye is as big a Jonathan Mensah fan as I am.
You should at least do the golden spike while he's there. I mean, come on.
Just get, why not? You got to score a goal though. You got to get a win.
That's true.
To get the golden spike. Otherwise, it's a little bit empty. And this was empty for Atlanta United on the results front. This is the first game at home after Gabriel Hansa was let go. Rob Valentino, of course, is the manager. There's a lot of talk about the vibes from the players. and how they're better right now, but the results were not. Doyle, what'd you see from Atlanta in this game? And we'll get to the crew. Don't worry, Caleb. We'll get to the crew here in a second. There is respect coming.
A couple of things from Atlanta. First, like they should have had a goal in this one. There were two or three chances that were, you know, pretty big chances, and they just can't hit the target, or they were hitting it directly at Eloy Room. And if you do that, then you not going to have a good time. So that, like, and that goes back to the types of players that they have on the wings, the secondary and tertiary goal scorers now in 2021 compared to what they had in 2019, which is the last time they were any good. It's just been a massive talent downgrade. And then the other thing, when Atlanta were great those first 3 years, they were so good at turning the opposing backline around and making them run at their own goal. And in those transition phases, Joseph is the best striker that we've ever had in this league. And he scored he's 5'7" and he scored on an absurd number of crosses. And part of it is, you know, he has incredible ups, and part of it is he has hang time, and part of it he has body control. But part of it is when you're running, when you're in transition like that, you're not necessarily going mano a mano against a 6'2" center back trying to outleap him. It's about more than just that matchup. It's about the movement, and it's about the fact that they are running towards their own goal and trying to factor that in. Well, this Atlanta team now does not ever turn the opponent around and face them at their own goal and make them scramble in that way. So they're hitting a million crosses, and it's all to Joseph. So you're like, oh, it's the same thing that they did in 2018 and 2019, except it's not, because now it's like Joseph battling a stationary defense, a set defense with two or sometimes three center backs back there, all playing for the exact same thing. You know, the Atlanta attack is always being shunted wide to usually the right, but it's been the left a little bit as well. And then you're hitting hopeful crosses to your 5'7" striker against 2 6-foot-tall center backs. And that is not a recipe for a good time. And the genesis of that is, frankly, in the midfield. And Mateus Rossetto was a relatively big signing for them, and he cannot pass the ball forward, as far as I can tell. And Marcelino Moreno, he was a massive signing for them, I think $6 or $7 million. And he's a ball stopper, man. And Barco's a ball. Yeah, Barco wasn't on the field this one. Barco's a ball stopper too. And so the personnel that they've accumulated over the past few years, they spend a lot of money on, don't make their best player better. They make him worse. And if you want to know the long and short of why Atlanta can't generate good chances, it's that. It's the fact that these guys that they have sort of running the show in central midfield, instead of taking those opportunities to play super vertical and use their skill, because they're all individually skillful, and get out into space and create the types of chances that defined Atlanta United and that Joseph thrived on, that they slow the ball down and they hit it side to side and they take too long to choose their passes. And so every time they attack, they're going against a set defense. And it's just, it's brutal to watch for Atlanta United fans right now. And it sucks, because Joseph's a lot less fun, and Joseph was one of the most fun players in league history, and it needs to change.
Darren Neal said that they're looking for a manager, looking for somebody out of contract, is what he said. We'll see what that means for Atlanta. We'll see what happens with their results going forward. But right now, not where they would want to be. We know that. Their coach got fired, below the playoff line, currently in 10th. Now, I think they were within striking distance, but now they are at 8 points out from Montreal in 7th. Let's talk crew, and let's let Caleb Porter do the honors. You got the floor, Caleb.
I don't care what people think, honestly. That's no disrespect to what people think. You know, I respect everybody's opinions, and I think it's great for our game that people have opinions. I think it's great that people write articles and do the power rankings and all that. I look at a lot of some of those things and wonder sometimes if anybody actually watches the games and really looks at like the lineups and looks who's out. But I'm not going to make excuses about who's out. I'm not going to tell everybody every week, but at the end of the day, I like where we're at. We're getting points. Can we play better? Yeah. I think everybody in the league can, but look at the lineups, watch the games and analyze the reality.
He's doing the Lord's work here. Caleb, we've been waiting for so long for somebody to just say what we've always said, which is watch the games. Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? This has been Extra Time's rallying cry for so long, and I'm just so excited and pleased that, one, Caleb thinks that the articles that perhaps we write or that we things we do in power rankings are great. That's a true compliment. And that he's joined the movement.
He actually normally is in the full hour 40 of the
You think Twitter so? Spaces. He gets on Twitter Spaces?
Every Tuesday, every Wednesday?
What's his burner? What do you think his burner is?
In that his burner? I actually didn't even. I had an idea and I was like, uh-oh, don't go there.
No, don't say that. Don't say that.
What do we think here? What do we think? I mean, look, everybody's missing a ton of players. We've talked about the crew missing players, but there is an aspect here of you win MLS Cup, you make the moves that they made, you have the roster that they have, the expectation and the standard is going to be really high.
Doyle, and you're an armchair analyst. What do you think?
Critical coverage is just sort of part of that.
So my take is that I respect every coach's opinion, and I think it's great for our show that coaches have opinions. I think it's great that coaches read the articles and read the power rankings and all that. And I look at, some of those things, and I wonder sometimes if, they watch the full show.
On YouTube.
Also check the lineups, right? Kalen's not in the show. You know it's lower quality, Caleb. You know it's not real takes. Come on.
I think what he said in that clip is what we've been saying about the crew for the past 5-6 weeks. Like they're a super talented team. They're figuring out how to grind out points. We wish they would play better. That's it.
And Weeby, you were saying it, and I think we've all said this 1,000 times. As Doyle saying, Peter Vermees came out after the SKC win and said this is not a statement win because none of us have our best 11s available. Yep. That was after he'd already won. He could say whatever he wants at that point. He's not putting himself in a bad spot. And so everyone's acknowledged that. And you look at this weekend's games and you talk about teams turning around from a Thursday night game with players out for international. We all know that. But at the same time, there has to be a level of expectation, as you're saying, Weeby, after winning MLS Cup, of we can put in these performances. I'm sorry, but Seattle rolled out a high school team and won in Austin. So there's expectations if you want to be considered, which I thought coming into this year that this was one of the best rosters in MLS history and one of the best returning MLS Cup champions we've ever seen, that even with those injuries, which suck, and even with international call-ups and all of that, an ability to continue to get results. Now, they've started to reach that point, and I think with the new stadium, they're fine, but they're not a Shield contender. And coming into this year, I thought they would be.
The tell for me was when he said power rankings. It's like, come on. Like, he told on himself. That's the one. It's like, it's not the I'm going to just cut to the chase. It's not the articles. It's not the headlines. It's the power rankings. It gets every coach. They can't stay away. You try to stay away, but you can't. Caleb, that's why we do it.
It's a copycat league, right? And everybody saw what Adrian Heath did by using the power rankings as bulletin board. Like, he got his team like 10 extra points by harping on the power rankings every week. So now Caleb Porter's no dummy. He knows that if he makes it into a power rankings thing every week, crew, 65 points this year, minimum. Minimum.
But he doesn't care about that.
That's the power of the power rankings.
Yes, all Caleb cares about is being higher in the power rankings. He's just looking for votes right now.
The one thing I will say about Columbus is, and you saw it in this last game as well too, is they have been able, they've been really good on set pieces, and that's helped them escape some of the injuries, the absences. If you have solid goalkeeping and you have good, and you're good on set pieces, you're going to give yourselves a chance. This one, Marlon Hairston, who's been used in and some of their depth too, where you know they've used him in a sort of a new spot for Hairston at times, and he does really well to get the flick on. And then Mensa is always a threat on set pieces. So yeah, there's been a couple times Ellerian, his service, you know, set pieces that's been able to get them some points. So that's a pretty good recipe, and I think. No, the Crew have not lived up, I would imagine, to even their own expectations so far this season. But when you look again towards the back half of the season, you get through this crazy stretch where teams are starting to get their full roster together. We're going to see Molina hopefully get back to form. We're going to see the rest of the team return.
He's looking spry, by the way. I like what I've seen from Molina over the past month.
Yeah, so I mean, I just think that that's going to be, that bodes well for them long term. And then you can say, I told you so, and be like, the power rankings are wrong all season, and the Crew are back.
Well, the power rankings are just a snapshot in time, so that's the way those work. But look, this
but
is
they
the
last.
Best.
The feelings last.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. It's an emotional roller coaster more than anything else. But they are arguably the best defensive team in the league. And maybe that's not a point that we've driven home as much as we should have. But maybe that is the sort of dichotomy of this, which is that what we saw in the playoffs last year and what we thought we'd see this year, we haven't seen from that sort of like intoxicating style of play, the goal scoring, the chance creation. It's really been sort of like Zellerion and then waiting for everybody else to get going.
That actually isn't that far off from what we saw in the playoffs. Outside of MLS Cup, they were not that explosive in the postseason.
That Red Bulls game? That Red Bulls game, they were real, like, they were real fun going forward.
They won 1-0?
3-2.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, then I'll just stop.
Watch the games, all right?
Yeah, clearly.
I respect your ability to have an opinion on this, Dave, but you got to watch the games here.
It's
16 goals scored. It's the slow-ish start, but they're rounding in form. They haven't lost them but once in like 10 games. So, Columbus, you're on the right track. It's still early. You've played but 15. There's a long way to go. This team can reach those heights. And honestly, I think we're all rooting for that. As a casual observer, I know I am. That was one of the joys of this season, was to see what Columbus could do with the group that they assembled, to see what Caleb could do in that sort of encore season, which has always been a little bit of a struggle for his teams in the past. So they're going to be fine. They're going to make the playoffs. We've been saying they're going to be fine for a while, but we're asking for, I think, a little bit more than fine. And I'm sure Caleb is too. And that was his point. It's fine right now. We want a little bit more. I think they'll get there. All right, let's keep it moving here. Let's get into some rumors, actually. And I'm going to bring it right back around to Atlanta. We just had to get to Caleb. Thiago Almada. DP signings without a manager. It's the Atlanta United way. Oof. This is like maybe the biggest prospect in Argentina.
He is the biggest prospect in Argentina right now. He's 20 years old, playmaker for Vélez Sarsfield. You know, he's a $20 million rated player. This isn't Barco, right? Like, Barco was considered one of the best super young prospects in Argentina in 2018 when they bought him. He had been not much in the league, but he had been really good and more really brave than really good in Copa Sudamerica. And like, oh, that hasn't worked out. And they got PT Martinez right after he was Conmebol player of the year. And that obviously didn't work out. And now Almada is kind of like combining those two things. Super high-end young prospect, considered the best player. Like, that's like it shows a lot of ambition. And if he plays if they get him and he plays as well with Atlanta as he has, you know, in Argentina, he'll fix a lot of things for them. But as we've seen over the past 4 years with this team, that's a big if.
Arthur Blank's not waiting around, man.
It's interesting to me, and it's credit to Atlanta, the pull that the club has, that I think Gabriel Heinze brought him through as a player at Vélez. For him to now potentially be willing to come to the club that we know Gabriel Heinze has pretty publicly through back channels, whatever, been disparaging of over the last week or two, shows the pull that Atlanta United has as a club, not based just off that figure and that coach. 3 years ago, I would have told you, who cares who the manager is? Who cares what the situation is? If you can get talent like this, you bring it in. Atlanta has maybe changed my mind about that because of the way Barco happened and what happened with PT, which I still can't explain. Like, it still blows my mind that an in-year prime South American player of the year coming out of River just couldn't find a way to be productive in this league. Atlanta's kind of been the reason that I would say maybe this doesn't work. But the one thing I would like to see is, if you bring a player like this in, you continue to sign players without a manager, then there has to be a cohesive idea. Okay, it's not from the manager, from even higher up, of how we play and what this team is. And then don't go out and get a Gabriel Heinze because of the profile and the personality. Go get a manager who is going to manage the players you are bringing in and the way it's set up. You've now made that decision. You can't have a manager come in and say, however they want to play is how they want to play. We trust them. You've built the roster. So you need to be the one who directs that even closer than what you've done.
Other rumors here? Not in Argentina, but yeah, in Argentina via Russia. Austin FC apparently back in for Sebastian Drewsi, and that feels a little bit like the Ake Loba thing. I mean, this is like a year and a half ago we were talking about this, but I think he got out of his contract with Zenit, and there's just a lot of smoke here. How would that change this team, Kalen? Like a legitimate, in your prime, done it in Europe, done it in Argentina, striker.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of obvious, right? I mean, you can see what is being built there in Austin, and of the teams that are sort of below this region right now of, like, you know, circling the playoffs or trying to get up, like, that feels like a club that if they added one big piece up front, that it would be able to maybe push them over the top and change things, because they're in most matches, they're solid, they have an identity, they have a way of playing, and they just have lacked that sort of finishing touch. So you add somebody with a profile like this, I mean, I think that it really could change things. I think you look across the league and you say, okay, would one piece maybe change Atlanta United? I don't know. I'm not so sure right now. Or you go around to some other clubs and you say, oh, what they're below right now. How do you, what's going to really push them over? I feel like Austin might be one of those sides where one signing like this really could change their entire season.
And maybe that's the domino effect for guys like Pochettino, or for Redis, or for Dominguez, or whatever it is, to get more out of those players. Clayton from Austin here. I get it. Schmetzer's a good coach, and his kids could play in a low block for 90 minutes and let Rui Diaz score a miracle golazo. You got to feel that. Feel it coming through. The real story here is Austin's textbook example of meaningless possession. 75-25 possession and near identical XGs. Is it just lack of talent, or is Wolf to blame for ineffective patterns of play in the final third? Any takes on that?
Seattle has a really good defense, even when they're missing players. They're like really well drilled. They have a very compact shape. They don't take risks, and it's hard to break that down. I don't, you know, I've been much more impressed than discouraged by what I've seen from Austin, even though they're struggling to put the ball in the back of the net. I don't know, man. It's an expansion team. There's going to be some rough patches. This is obviously one, but I'm with Kalen. Like, there's a lot that says about the way they play. There's a lot that says, like, they're just a piece or two away. Now, I don't know if Jersey's going to be the guy. He wasn't super productive in Russia, but it's worth noting. In Russia, he played mostly as a winger or a second striker. When he was with River Plate, he was much more of a center forward, and he was much more productive, especially in that last year he had. So I think, we said it from the off with Austin. Like, this is a really good roster build. They don't have any center forwards. And if they address that, then I think we're going to start seeing that possession turn into something more than just, something more than just possession.
So the only thing is, I think in MLS and around the world, but MLS specifically, goal scoring is one of those things that you pay for.
Yeah.
It costs money, but when you pay for it, you normally get the production for it. It's harder to create it, you know, using pieces that other people don't want, creativity. Like, you can grind through a bit, you can do that defensively. You can build midfields with, you know, unwanted pieces, whatever it is. Goal scoring is the one thing that it just costs money. And I think the Rapids will tell you that, right? They've been successful. They've put together some really good rosters, but that still is a piece that they're missing. Austin hasn't spent that money. And so this is the move they've kind of been waiting for, but the way we saw them build has been patient. And they haven't spent too early. They haven't gone too quickly. And I think that's what you're seeing here is waiting for this player to become available, but this isn't a one-year build. They weren't building to just make the postseason or compete for MLS Cup year one. It's supposed to be long-term. And so I think they have the right ideas, and they've done it right, and they've kept their head above water, but they have 10 goals on the season. It's lowest in the league for a reason. And this is what they're kind of, I think, been waiting for this whole time.
Let's get to MLS Week 15. People are like, come on, transfer rumors? There's a full weekend to talk about. Let's do it. And include transfer rumors. The 22 under 22 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor, Ricardo Pepi. Let's go. Hat trick. Youngest in MLS history. Oh, LA Galaxy. Take that. Three goals from the young man. He's rocking the cowboy hat afterwards. He's honoring his grandfather, saying, this is for you. Now there's transfer rumors from Serie A for him, from Bologna. Here's the trivia. Who was the previous youngest hat trick scorer in MLS history? And I'm just hoping you guys don't follow the same Twitter accounts that I do. And I can see that they do.
I knew it. But
like, can I take a guess? Because yes, I haven't seen it. I was going to guess Eddie Gavin.
Oh, that's a good shout.
No, a little more recent.
I will say that there's only one other teenager who's ever scored an MLS hat trick. And
Eddie Johnson might have been the one I would have gone with.
He's still playing in MLS. Yeah. He's still an active player in MLS.
Really?
Oh. He actually, I believe, he's not born in Austin, but I believe maybe raised in Austin. He was definitely in Texas.
Yeah. Yep. He grew up in Austin. He played for the Austin Aztecs.
Yeah.
Before he got drafted.
Breck?
No.
No.
Good guess as well, though.
Kakuta Mane. Kakuta Mane was the previous youngest hat trick in MLS history. Dave, you know, you've been conducting this train. Choo-choo. Pepi, let's go. Give me all your takes.
One, thank you. Thanks, Lucci. I appreciate it. Put him up top. Let him score goals. He's done it every single time. I think Kalen sat with him as well. Phenomenal human being. Like, you want the best for him. One of the things that everyone at Dallas always said was they'd push him up to North Texas. He'd score. They'd think it's best for him to train with the 17s again. He wouldn't complain. He got into the MLS team, wasn't getting time. They train him with North Texas, doesn't complain. Is all about what he's doing, understands how to be a part of the team, isn't moving too fast, doesn't have expectations that we see with some young players of, oh, I need to be the starter. I need to be anointed right here and right now. And he scores goals. He always is dangerous. He is always productive. He reads the game well. He knows how to move defenders around. And he's not strong yet, but he's scrappy. And he's able to hold his space, and he's able to get around defenders. And then he can finish with either foot. And you even see him when they were playing him the last 3 weeks while he still scored goals. Underneath Hara or out wide, he can still be effective. He's smart enough and he's talented enough to just change the game. And now at center forward, what did I say? 3 years ago, he was the future U.S. number nine. Do it now. Greg, emergency call up. Get Pepi in the side. Start him versus Qatar.
He's close. He's close by.
Drive down.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of the Dallas is already on the side.
16 shots on target, 8 goals.
Yeah.
He's got a knack.
Yeah. When I did go talk to him, I watched him play with North Texas in a playoff match against the Madison side.
And he scored a hat trick?
I think he had 2 goals.
Wow. Look at you. One just trolling forward Madison too, with, like, right? I don't know, whatever the hell that team in Madison.
It was, yeah.
In Wisconsin or something?
It was coached by my old coach, Daryl Shore. Great guy at the time. Anyway, so... But in that match, though, I was kind of hoping, like, we were doing a feature on him for the movement. And I was like, oh, I hope he can do something this game. That'd be really helpful for us. And then it's like 2 goals. He ran straight to the camera, slow motion. I was like, all right, I love this kid.
He's a star.
Between Marlon Harrison, the listening party, and that's 3 movement references in one show already. Right there. That's
R.I.P.
elite.
R.I.P.
I'm just going to make a point here. When Ricardo Pepi starts at center forward for Dallas this year, they are 3-2-2, 3 wins, 2 losses, 2 draws. In games where he doesn't start at center forward, they are 0-5-2.
Yeah. So
I know it's not correlation causality.
No. I'm gonna take this with you, and I'm just gonna say, you have some players who come to MLS from other countries. A lot of times it's from Europe. And they talk about the pressure and how the pressure's there and not. And like Haras handed a starting spot because he's a DP. Pepe outperforms him and Haras still gets the spot. And yet all the veterans are telling us there's not enough push and pressure in this league. And it's like, well, you're kind of the problem for us. Like young guys have earned minutes. And because of the nature of salary caps and ownership and all that stuff, which is fair. A lot of guys who get paid more will get more and more opportunities.
At some point, it's on Lucci. At some point, fair. Lucci's got to be the coach, and he has to
And I think he was this weekend.
I think so too. And it doesn't mean Haras never going to play again, because there's going to have to be a lot of rotation given the way the schedule is over the next 3 months. But like the time to make the call is now, because it's not just it's the season on the line. It's not just about play your kids. It's like, this kid is actually better than the other options. And frankly, I mean, Lucci's job might be on the line here. So, and Pepe's showing to be the type of talent who is a job saver. And I've said all, like, since Jozy Altidore, the U.S. has produced two, like, A-plus level center forward prospects. One is Josh Sargent. And currently that's not working out so great, but it is worth noting he has like 5,000 Bundesliga minutes before he turned 21 years old. So it's not like working out disastrously. And the other is Ricardo Pepi. And Pepi is not as smooth in possession and link-up play as Sargent was as an 18-year-old and obviously is now. But he's just lethal around the box. And he's gotten – what's really encouraging is he's gotten – more diverse in the way he finishes and the way he finds goals, because it 2 years ago, he was just, getting the ball, shrugging a guy off and then rifling it into the net. And he still does that. His third goal from this weekend does that. Like, he is finding one-time finishes now. He's much better in the air than he was. He's setting up his runs a little bit better, which sets up defenders a little bit better. He's a high upside prospect. And I hope that when, I hope that when he picks a national team, he picks the U.S. because Tata's trying real hard to get.
We love you, Ricardo.
He's gotten better for sure, but I feel like some of the when you watch him move around the box, a lot of that is natural. I think he's got just a very natural way of just understanding where the space is. You know, the one where it kind of turns and uses his momentum to come and take that extra second to let the ball come across him and then come back across the grain. He finishes both right foot, left foot. I don't know. I for young prospects, I mean, even when you watch him, like I watched him score in those other games, it's like he just has he can do it. He has all the technical parts of it, but just that sort of understanding of movement in the box and just being a pure finisher. I haven't seen somebody finish like that. And I think he's going to get better. I think he's going to get stronger. He's good in the air already, but I think he's going to get a little bit, probably better with time, in that department. So he can go and he can get him behind a little bit cause he's lanky and he can stretch you a little bit. So he's kind of got it all right now. And then the confidence as well. I think he'd scored, especially at home, like the last four matches, I think leading up to this one, and then the hat trick. But yeah, I mean, you can say, yeah, the Galaxy didn't have their best day. Shorthanded, et cetera, et cetera. But anytime you got a kid scoring his third goal in the 56th minute, kind of going to the sideline, like saying it's over. And he was going for four. That's the other part I liked. He was trying to get the fourth. Like he was not satisfied with three. He was trying to get the fourth, almost had it. So he's a big prospect and we'll have to see how long he sticks around, especially when you think of all the players that have moved on from Dallas. Yeah. How long are we going to be seeing this kid in MLS?
That's my next question.
Yeah.
Times are changing. There was a time where any transfer rumor outgoing, we would be all over, and now we barely can fit them all into the show. The one with him now is Bologna. But you would expect, given the attention MLS is getting and given his performances, that this is going to be the reality for Ricardo Pepi from here on out. Is the clock ticking, and when does that, when does the alarm go off? What do you think his future looks like? Like,
It's actually probably been delayed a little bit because of COVID, less youth national team stuff. Because remember, Josh Sargent's deal came off playing with the U-17s and playing with the U-20s. And Pepe hasn't had that chance over the last year and a half, 2 years, because there wasn't those camps. And obviously, once you're playing with the first team, now things have shifted a little. So I'd be shocked if it was this season or this window, but not surprised if it's coming in the near future. And as you guys have said, you look at the prospects that have been sold. I mean, he's the best finisher, I think, that I've ever seen in this region at his age. And I've watched Canada, U.S., Mexico, you know, the top youth players come through and play reserves, USL, Mexican League, all that stuff. And I think he's the cleanest that I've seen. So the potential's limitless. I do have to throw this out there, though.
That's a nuclear take, but I think I agree with it.
But that's why I've been on his train for 3 years, because I wasn't sure how he fits in, how does his body fill out, all these things. But he scores, and everyone's going to need that. And at some point, it's useful. And when you saw him break into Dallas, it was off the bench, late in game, scoring scrappy goals. But he did it, and so he was always going to get opportunities. But we did ask, I think for some reason, there became a narrative post-Reynolds of like, well, who's the next one for Dallas? Has the academy dried up? They started 4 homegrowns in this game, and Cerrillo's probably a starter in other games. And so it could have been 5 to get performances. So Dallas continues to get it done.
Yeah. And the thing I keep thinking about is center forwards are the most expensive spot on the field. And if 19-year-old Brian Reynolds went for $9 million to Roma, how much is 18-year-old Ricardo Pepi going to go for? And to, like, Bologna is nice. I would actually rather see him go to a club like that where he has a chance to play, as opposed to Roma, where we know that Brian Reynolds is not going to play this year for Mourinho. But this could be a big one. I will be surprised if Pepe doesn't set a new, if his transfer fee doesn't set a new record for outgoing homegrown MLS players. I think that Davies is still the most at about 13 million, though I guess probably with incentives, Davies could hit.
I think it ended up at like 20.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe not 20,
but Dallas has been able to move players that haven't maybe, you know, had a ton of minutes or a ton of starts, and they've been able to move those guys. So when you see a kid who's like showing proof of concept in MLS, it's going to be, and with the pedigree of the club, because I do think that does matter. You have clubs around the world that trust players coming out of Dallas because of what they've been able to produce.
I just want our listeners to know that Anders is in the chat right now saying, why buy Haaland when you could have the real answer is, once you sell Haaland, right, then you use that money
reinvest
to buy Pepe.
Oh, now see, now we're on to something. now we're dreaming.
I could see Pepe in front of the yellow wall. There'd be a lot of cowboy hats all of a sudden in Dorian.
That's now I'm gonna let you guys talk while I imagine that for the rest of this show. Let's talk Galaxy real quick. 1 win in the last 5. Chicharito's been out. We know he was sort of the talisman, and he was given the goals, and obviously the vibes were great. I don't think the vibes are bad, but the results aren't nearly so good. What is it, just Chicharito? Is there something?
Well, you gotta mention Jonah. They're missing Jonah just as much as they're missing Chicharito now.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Chicharito to me is the one that is, he, I think part of it is also, the vibes, but like just his presence, his energy, the team seemed to really feed off him in the good moments that were going on. And they've also just had a little bit of a tough stretch just in general, where they ran across, I think just in the past week, Vancouver, who has been in good form right now, Real Salt Lake, again, midweek, who's also been in good form, and then have to finish it in Dallas in the heat. It just got away from them. So I think, you know, even when the good moments for the Galaxy this year, their back line is still not in a position where they're going to be able to win games or keep them in it without their striker. Even the games they were winning were often 3-2. Chicharito needs 2 goals. Like, you have to be able to get volume chances and get him in and around the box for them to get wins, which they have been able to do. But they just, within his absence, I don't think they've had enough. And it showed a little bit of maybe why we didn't put them in that top tier of MLS sides, as far as can it's they challenge
back,
for.
It's always back to the power rankings. It's always back to the power rankings.
Right? Always.
Well, they're dropping in the power rankings right now. Yeah. I just want to say that's the true metric. And so
Williams has been horrific since he's come back.
I was going to say, you mentioned Pepe's plus minus. I think Williams might be one of the worst in the league. And I'm not a huge Daniel Starris fan, but the better performances the Galaxy put together is normally Depew and Starris next to each other.
I mean, Depew, it is weird to me that Depew isn't in ink on that team.
Agreed. Because it should be the other guy that's rotating. Yeah,
it's really, like, he's been really, really good. So I think Greg Vanney's got to figure that out.
They're still in third in the West, 25 points, you know, just seven back of Seattle, and they have a game in hand as well. No game in hand on Kansas City, who are up 5 points on them. But here's a weird one with them. They're minus three goal differential with the third best record in the West. So, LA Galaxy, got to get Chicharito and Jonah back. They're still in great position right now. Let's keep it rolling here. And also, there is news on them on the transfer front. But by God, we don't have enough time to do all of these. Apparently, a 21-year-old Serbian center forward they're going after, who scored 20 goals in the Austrian Bundesliga last year and has been on the books at Eintracht Frankfurt. So go look at that. Go look that up if you'd like to. NYCFC fans always get mad at us, say we don't give them enough time. We've been complaining that maybe they aren't getting enough production. Attacking, they haven't been consistent. Well, Orlando rolled out again, just so we say it, so everybody knows it, a rotated team, not a first-choice team. They didn't have all the players they would have liked to have in this game, but NYCFC just smacked them. 5-0. Just, you know, full-hand slap across the face. Tati Castellanos did Tati Castellanos things, which is that he created a bunch of goals himself without scoring them and then finally got on the score sheet. Walk us through this statement win, Doyle. What was the statement that was made?
I don't think it was a statement win because it was
NYCFC fans, chew on that.
It was a home game against a heavily rotated Orlando City squad. And, like, to be fair, NYCFC were rotated a bit, missing a few pieces, Sean Johnson and James Sands, and obviously Eber isn't back, and you know, Ronnie Dyla is doing some stuff in midfield and fullbacks that are different, but the underlying numbers have suggested all year that NYCFC is really, really, really good. The results haven't reflected that because Tata Castellanos can't finish, and in this game they were so good and so dominant that it didn't matter that he spent the first 70 minutes missing point blank attempts, and like everybody else was buzzing. Jesus Medina, Maxi Morales was superb in this game. Keaton Parks put in another strong game, and both fullbacks. And so when they play like that, it almost doesn't matter if your center forward can finish or not. I think this is one of the three best teams in the East. I think they have played actually the best soccer. If you think back to that game that they had against the Revs, they absolutely dominated the Revs. And the difference was Matt Turner winning player of the week that week. If they play like that, they're going to be really, really good, whether or not Castellanos becomes a remotely consistent finisher. But I think whether or not Castellanos becomes a consistent finisher determines, that's like the difference between really, really good and A-tier MLS Cup Supporters Shield contenders. And that's like, that's the range that we're talking about for NYCFC right now. Like one of the top six teams in the league or one of the top two teams in the league.
I think Castellanos has had it. When I just think of his season, though, it's like, I think he was rumored to be moved to South America, maybe some offers coming in, but the club wants to keep him, from what I've heard. So I could see how that could have
big contract. He got
he signed a new contract.
That was 5-year deal.
But it was like 2 weeks into the season.
Yeah.
Right.
To Kalen's point. Like it wasn't settled when they started the year.
Yeah. And that can affect players in different ways. And I agree that, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe when Eber comes back, does that potentially change their ceiling and take them over the top? But the thing that has worked for NYCFC and I think when they are firing, it's the diversity of the attack, the amount of different options that they can. And it generally runs through Maxi Morales, right? When he's there, he can bring out the best in so many different players. But in this one, you know, when we went through the whole list, we didn't even mention Tajiri Shradi, who just absolutely
crushed that ball. Dude, when he cuts in and he's going to shoot, if you're a goalkeeper, it's just like, just cover your face.
Yeah.
Like just cover your vital organs and just be like, just don't hit me, please.
God, and he's one of those guys, those lefties where you're just like, you know, he's probably going to go back to that left-hand side, but he just puts the thought in your mind for 1 second, a split second, that he might go right. And then it's like, oh no, it's too late. but I think Castellanos will find his form at some point. It's just, and sticking with it and getting one, I think was big for him in this one, even if it was ugly and just like just a bit of a scrappy one. But they've found confidence. I mean, Medina as well should be mentioned throughout the season. I mean, he took his chance well, and his confidence has been big for him because he was kind of one of those guys I think a lot of people may have given up on. And said that it really wasn't going to work for him there. And he's shown this season that he can be a player, not just to, you know, to help out, but that they can actually depend on this year to score important goals.
I think about Tati and what he does really well. And then because I was thinking about him while I was watching the US game and people were complaining about Daryl DK's holdup play, I was thinking if Daryl DK can be the Tati Castellanos for the US men's national team, that probably would be okay. I don't know if that's like just a random where the hell did that come from
pretty,
take, but
yeah,
like
that's pretty random. I would say that it's Hoppy who is more likely to be that type of center forward in terms of his buzzing around and not necessarily having the cleanest touches, but finding the right spots and just being miserable to play against. Like Daryl, we're not supposed to be talking about the U.S. national team for.
I'm just saying in the sense that Tati Castellanos uses his timing, his runs, and his physicality so well to open up space for other players, and his vision is elite in and around the 18 once he gets in those areas. Like, those are the little things that I think people were asking from Daryl, and maybe this connects because Orlando, but I think Daryl has that as well, and maybe Daryl's in the same way where he's still a little raw as far as the finishing goes. I don't know. I like watching Tati Castellanos plays, and I love that he got an assist without even looking at it. He, like, fell on a ball and put it in Jesus Medina's path. Big win for NYCFC. Let's talk Seattle, just because I know Anders doesn't want us to. Brian Schmetzer says they're tired. And they are. So it broke for them. They're no longer in the Shield lead. They've had a great season. Sporting Kansas City comes to Seattle and gets a big win. Cameron Duke gets another goal. Daniel Shalloway gets a goal and straight up preens. Like, his celebration on that, he enjoyed that so much. I asked what the statement was for NYCFC. What's the statement for Sporting Kansas City?
Again, Peter said nothing. So you can't tell. We can't tell you it's a statement win.
Weeby is completely at sea, not being able to do narratives on this show. What's the statement? Who's making a statement here?
Is there a statement?
What does the world mean for Joey Desart right now? the statement means that KC came in as one of the three or four best teams in the Western Conference, and they are still one of the three or four best teams in the Western Conference. They are not better than Seattle because of what happened yesterday. But they have set themselves up for a supporter shield run because they've kept their head above water, missing big pieces. And if they can stay where they're at and Pulido comes back, they're only going to get better. They're one of the best home atmospheres in the league. So everything was positive about it. But if Peter Vermees comes out after the game and says, this is not a statement win, it's hard for us to call it a statement win.
Fair.
I will say, I said on Thursday that Johnny Russell had hit one of the best free kicks in the season and he won't get credit for it. I'm happy for him now that he will get credit for this one because it went in.
I do have to throw out, Cameron Duke really looks like a exciting young player for Kansas City. His brother actually was in this team a while back. Christian Duke was in the team and was with Sporting too as well. So a little family affair for Kansas City in that sense. How about New England? Shield leaders. Gustavo Bo's got 9 on the season. On Paul Mariner night, gets 2, knock off Club de Foot.
There was some smoked shots this week. Like Shallowy's hit, Boo's hit, Sifu. They rocketed these shots across the league. It was pretty cool to watch.
What do you think of Bruce saying that he has no plans to sell any players before the end of the season? At the same time that Tom is reporting that the offers for Tejan are now up to $5 million.
Not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising at all. You don't advertise that you're planning to sell the guy if you want to drive up the price.
Well, exactly. If I was Bruce, right. That's exactly
but
what
he's
I was
also saying. He's also someone who is completely secure in his job, so he's not relying on this. He's working at a club that's never won MLS Cup, but also has no history of like being quick to sell.
I actually believe him. I don't think that is just hyperbole that he's saying to try to drive the price up. I don't think he wants to lose Buchanan because he knows how important he is to this team to win MLS Cup, and that's always been Bruce's like singular focus, right?
Also, it's going to come naturally, right?
But like, we did this with
gonna
Tom
be
on
World
Thursday.
Cup qualifying. He's going to continue to affect games. He may have even bigger moments in the playoffs. Like, this is naturally going to happen. It seems for the Revs that if they want to sell him, it's going to be more than what it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. But we talked about this with Tom on Thursday, right? Like maybe there's a chance that they sell and get him loaned back. But every indication has been this club is trying to win MLS Cup right now, and he's a part of that. So they're not going to reshift that. And for, I think, the timeline of how long he's played and the way his value has increased, you're not going to hurt yourself by not selling in the next 4 weeks or 5 weeks and pushing it to at worst next January.
Yeah, and it's not bad timing for him either to make a move, stick with his side through this season, and then try and go in the January window leading up to next year. So I don't think it's necessarily the worst for both sides. I don't see why there would be a rush to sell and make a move now, even though maybe for another club. That's the interesting part for me. It's like not every club needs to follow the same model. Not every club needs to be a selling club. Not every club needs to find a young player, have success, and get rid of them right away. I understand that that works for a lot of clubs. It's sure making some good money, but it's not necessarily always leading to results in the table. It's just not. And so for New England, they don't have to play the same role that Dallas might play, or Philadelphia might play, or you know, even New York might look to. They might say, look, this is our window, the same way that other clubs like LAFC have made choices, or Atlanta have made choices in the past to say, MLS Cup is our priority right now, and we're going to get the most out of this roster as we can. Sure, do you take on some sort of risk in that sense, as far as maybe somebody gets injured, or the valuation, or a global pandemic, or all of the things that have happened that can change in the transfer market? But Tayshaun is just getting better still. And I know he's 22 years old now, so not as young as maybe some of the other young prospects coming through MLS. But as far as his development goes, he's still just kind of bursting onto the scene. Just at the end of last year, I think, was really when he kind of like really took over, and he's sort of switched between positions and sides. So he's still developing, which is why he's such a hot prospect. But I could see why New England would say, I'm sure, especially as he's mentioned with Bruce, like we're in no rush.
I don't think the Crafts would put any pressure on him in that sense either. They want the trophy. They want to win. That's what they want. Doyle, before we let you go, I know you got to walk out of here and handle some business. Is Carlos Hill going to break the all-time assist record? He's halfway there to tying it, at least. Valderrama's 26. He's got 13. He got a second assist this weekend. Those count the same. Can he break it?
I don't think so. 26 assists in a season is a lot, and at some point he's going to have to rest, and the revs are going to cool off. I mean, Gustavo Bo has been on fire in front of goal for the past 2 months, but he's a notoriously streaky player. And if he dries up,
you know, Buxa went off hurt yesterday.
Yes. And they don't have any other finishers besides those two guys. So I will take under 26, but he's going to become the fourth guy ever to have 20 assists in a season, 20 or more assists in a season. It was Pibe back in 96, or was it 98?
I think it was 98.
Yeah. Pibe in 98. And then Sasha in 2016, I want to say, and then Maxi Morales 2 years ago. So
all right. I'll just say that if he breaks 20, then he has the record in my mind. Respect to Carlos Valderrama, legend, GOAT, but assists in 1998 were awarded differently than they are in 2021. Yeah, although maybe Sasha would disagree, because his last one was pretty favorable as well.
I fought for him to get that one, man. I fought.
So people, if Matt Doyle's in his corner, then maybe it's the same thing.
People are wondering what that means, what Dave just said. Well, I'll break it down for you. So now, to get that second assist, it basically has to be a defense, has to affect the defense. Like, you have to provide an opportunity for another guy in an attacking way, a through ball, perhaps, to a streaking runner into a channel who provides a cross across, something that actually is an attacking pass that unbalances a defense. Before 98, those rules, it was straight up hockey, where like you could pass it directly to the side at midfield. That guy could hit a diagonal ball over the top, which is the true assist, and you would get an assist on that play. So that is the difference in that sense. And it does make you examine some of the assist records over time and think about them. It also makes what Landon Donovan did, spanning two generations, even more impressive with the numbers that he put up. All right, Doyle, that's it for you.
That's it for me.
Adios.
See you guys in 2 weeks.
Hasta luego. Oh,
man, 2 weeks. Sounds nice. All right, let's hit some quick hits here. And actually, let's not quick hit. Let's hit Portland with a little bit of vigor, because I know their fans want that. What's up with the Timbers? Sebastian Blanco's easing back in. 2-1 loss in Minnesota. Just seems kind of like just a little bit of something is missing, maybe.
Yeah, they're missing a ton of pieces, and they have. I think we did this on Thursday, but Eric Williamson's huge to what they do in midfield, either with Diego Chara in the team or without him. They're missing Bravo along that back line. So now they've swapped Van Rink inside. They have to bring in, you know, Bonilla at right back. Niashkoda's still not back. Obobese's finally starting to hit form. Blanco slowly coming back into it. They just have 18 different pieces that haven't been there. And yet the results, I think, have been good enough. You'd want to win this game against Minnesota, especially after going up early and having that opportunity. But when you look at what they've done over the last few weeks, or I think actually this entire season, it's kind of just been treading water until they can get everything back. And I think they're going to get all their pieces back and healthy going into the playoff run. And that's all Portland Timbers need. They don't need, you know, this is a club, especially under Gio Savarese, that's shown they can take a run and just use that and get all the way to an MLS Cup.
Do you think the Sebastian Blanco killing can come back and be the Blanco of before? In his early to approaching mid-30s, coming back from a pretty serious knee injury. I hate to make you the knee injury specialist on this show, but...
Well, I also picked Joseph to win the Golden Boot this year, which is looking unlikely. But I do think so. And especially when you look at his game, not necessarily reliant on speed or athleticism overly. He's got a different type of athleticism as far as his balance, his shiftiness, his low center of gravity, and his technique, right? But I think he can. I think it's just going to take a little bit of time. I think this actually follows pretty squarely in line with the Caleb Porter, where you got to look at the roster, you got to look at who's available, who's unavailable, and sure, you got to watch the games too. So I think that this is a case, I agree with you, Goss, that this is a team that still has a lot left in it. Now, the pieces now that they're relying on a little bit more, where it's Chara, but without Williamson, or Valeri without Blanco, it puts a little bit more on their shoulders right now, which I think they've done fine. I think there's still more in them, but it's supposed to work the other way around, where you get Williamson to bring out, to take, alleviate some of the pressure on Charles. You get more out of him. You get Blanco to help take some off Valeria's load. And then, you know, if you get Bobisi getting going again too. So I think there's still a lot left for them. On the other side, Minnesota, I really like Robin Lud, the way that they came in. He was just a threat the entire match. I think just gives them something very different as far as we worried, okay, without Molino this year, who's the guy that they can kind of lean on to do something a little bit unexpected or find a 1-2 or a nice combination play around the box. He was dangerous all match. And then of course gets the important one. Chase Gasper, give a little shout out. They like literally threw like a jump ball, like an alley-oop, yeah, three seriously. Flies up.
It was like a set. It was just like straight up in the air. Like who's going to get up higher? Who's going to get there?
Yeah, which for all the chances that they had seemed a little bit ironic that that was the one that they were able to finish off. And then the last one too with Reynoso with just an amazing, beautiful through ball through to Lud on there. So good on for Minnesota United to come back because going down early. And then they really started to kind of like apply pressure in waves as the match went on.
I would like to exercise some of those ghosts from the beginning of the season. Like it felt like belief was sort of hanging in the balance for them of like, oh crap, we were supposed to be really good. Are we good? I think they're starting to be like, oh yeah, we are good. And we're starting to figure out what the partnerships are that work, whether that be in midfield with Dotson and Will Trapp, whether that be up top, which is still a TBD, but Ramon Avila is not the answer pretty clearly. Hunu still needs to do a little bit more, but it's not going to be Ramon, but starting to see that Adrian Heath is like, okay, this is the team. This is at least my first choice. This is who vibes together the best.
So I would just say on the last thing on Blanco, back to the Portland thing, I don't think he has to be the same player. There's a better roster and a better team than what he was a part of when he got injured. So I don't think the expectation is there. But the things he does, he's the only one who does them. And the quality he has, even if he can just be on the field. I mean, you saw in the LAFC game, right? He was the one who served in the ball. Man, there's been 1,000 games this week. He was the one that served in the ball for the 93rd minute winner. Doesn't have to move to do that. Like he doesn't have to be the guy he was at MLS's back last year, and he can still be super important and effective for this.
Where sport. Joseph needs to be the guy, Joseph exactly as he was, or more so than he was. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Totally different pressure as far as their comebacks go.
All right, let's hit some quick hits and get to the mailbag. Nashville 3, Cincinnati nada. CJ Sapong. This is my team, Ake Loba. I score the goals here, and Hani Mukhtar keeps doing his thing.
It's been an okay few weeks for Cincinnati. I say that, you know, obviously they gave up 5 goals and lost the game. They led twice, but they've gotten results. The first goal in this game, Hani Mukhtar lays it off for a teammate the teammate misreads the pass, and Hani Mukhtar recovers and gets his own missed pass before an FC Cincinnati player can get there, and then there's zero pressure on him on the cross. It is horrific defending in that moment. This was Cincinnati's best 11 that was put out there. So, yeah, not to rain on Nashville's parade, who's been awesome the last few weeks, and they've really – the striker corps responded to Ake Loba being signed, which is never a negative thing, and Mukhtar looks the most comfortable he's looked in MLS. But that was just the only thing that stood out for me in that moment.
Toronto, big performance.
I just say I love that real quick? Just on when a big signing comes in, that the American strikers are like, wait a minute. It's just like, it always gives you actually a little bit where you want to fight for your place a little bit because you know.
Yeah.
Well, you got $6 million in there?
What's the Grand Theft Auto meme that's like, ah, damn, here we go again? You know, like that's CJ Sapong's life right there.
I think Carlo Costley, when he came to Houston, I was like, all right, I gotta score a goal or two. Keep my face. Shout out to Carlo. Great guy.
Toronto 2, Chicago 1. 14 saves for Alex Bono. Nice win for Toronto. Anything on that one?
Well, Chicago had a billion chances. Bono did well. But frustrating match for Chicago because it's, again, you think that they're goal dangerous. They're around it. They had a ton of just so many opportunities, but just didn't really amount to much. And then you see the like gap in quality where Toronto get their chances, you know, maybe not as many, but not even, I think they may have had like 3x the chances for Chicago than Toronto, but Toronto comes away with it. And I think under the new manager now, they've hit a good little run of form, at least as it relates to results.
And just to see Soteldo hit the back of the net, I think is huge. Not that he hasn't been confident. It's all I've been talking about for 2 weeks is you see it all there. You just need production. But when I talked earlier about you get what you pay for with goal scoring, Aliceta had what, 2-3 chances inside the six right in front of the goal. And Soteldo gets a half chance and he's able to sneak in and finish it off the side of his foot in the first minute and a half of this game. Awkward way, but he does, you know, he's fine about it. So that's kind of that gap in difference in those moments. And this went from being Chicago up 2-0 on Thursday to a brutal week in such a quick time span.
This was a homestand for them that they got a point?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's not good. DC United winners against the Red Bulls. I don't know who made the note, but somebody did in our rundown. DC out, Red Bull, the Red Bulls. This was my my 2022 game to watch. But Red Bulls now under the playoff line. So like we were talking about the Young Hungry Wolves and they were getting results, but this is sort of, I think, the natural progression of a young team and Struber's team, which is there were going to be ebbs and flows. Right now they're in a little bit of an ebb. We'll see if they can start flowing again. San Jose, Houston, 1-1. Not going to talk about that one. Apologies to Quakes and Houston fans. RSL 3-0 over Colorado. That's a big win for RSL. And Bobby Wood is back and back scoring.
It doesn't matter. This is one of the weirdest things in MLS. I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter how good Colorado is. RSL dominates this rivalry. Right? Like every time Colorado is up and RSL is down.
It's been a good decade plus of RSL dominance.
I think that's the whole thing. Post Brian Dunseth playing.
Probably Jason Christ. Probably post Mastroeni thrusts.
True. So since
and
the
now
trade.
He's on the other side, so I don't know how he reacts to
right.
something.
Right.
Like
so since, but since the trade, for sure, for Beckerman, for
Medi.
Medi Bellucci, legend.
Yeah, Medi.
Shout out to the American 10 that we never had. It's been all RSL. This RSL team, we've said it before, Bobby Wood has potential to be this, maybe, but they don't have a one star, but they are deep everywhere. And there are players that you can trust to go in there. And you look at Ashton Morgan stepping in at left back after Donny Toy has played well, after Andrew Brody's played well. You look at Krylock's ability to move around in a couple different positions. Rusnak in pretty good form right now, but it's been up and down, but it doesn't matter. They really do have two or three options at most positions. And that, I think, over the course of this season, especially the way the schedule's lining up, I think it's going to keep them in the playoff run because other teams don't have that.
They're above the line right now, 20 points. For RSL, big win, rivalry win against Colorado. LAFC drew with Vancouver, had to come back against Vancouver. Sifu and Vela get the goals. But, you said it, Kaylin. Vancouver, nice couple results recently. Like, you know, it's been mostly ebbs for them, but, you know, there is a flow here. There's something happening. I don't know what it is. They're missing Cavallini. Why they do it?
Yeah, I'm still, you know, in the list of, when I was going through the list of names of teams that might make one big signing and change the things, I would still, even though they've been in good form, I know Vancouver, I think, is rumored to be in for
Scottish
a number
Messi, bro. Yeah, Scottish yeah. Messi.
Ryan Gauld.
Ryan okay. Gauld.
Okay. I think Vancouver's still a couple pieces away from competing, but they, on their day and right now, they've been in good form.
Miami,
Vancouver Whitecaps Twitter thought that Kalen was in Portugal trying to negotiate that deal. So that's upsetting that Kalen's acting like
yeah, that you're acting like the Ryan Gauld is not.
But I will say this. What I wanted to see the whole time, and I think you've seen over the last few weeks, is Caicedo and Dahomey in the right positions, playing off that center forward. Neither of them starting inside. Both of them coming from the outside. Brian White, for what limitations he's had finishing in MLS, he loves to set players up. He's always finding the ball. He's always an option underneath. So that looks comfortable. You scale that up with Cavallini, and you bring Golden, who it sounds like can cover the ground to be part of that midfield three. And there's some hopeful promise going forward for Vancouver.
I don't know if you guys saw Inter Miami didn't lose, so that's something. I don't know if you guys saw the clip making the rounds right now of Gonzalo Higuain in the 35th, literally like walking head down. That's sort of been the image of their entire season. But hey, 1-1 draw at home against Philadelphia. They'll take what they can get at this point. And they're also taking, according to Paul Tenorio, Ventura Alvarado. Coming to the back line, baby. Is this the end of the Ryan Shawcross experience? I don't know.
It's never a good sign when giving up an 86th minute equalizer at home is a step forward.
But it was a huge step forward.
Yeah. I mean, they at least fought. They at least showed some resilience in this one. And, you know, I don't know, but it's after where it's been so bad. It's been so down. I mean, I think this was, like David Beckham was in the crowd today. I don't know how I listened to the podcast. I said on the plane on the way back, you guys said everything you can about Miami right now. So I'm just going to lay off.
Yeah, we will lay off. All right, let's get to the mailbag and get out of here. Dave, handle the business here. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. If you want to get at us, let's do it.
Let's start national team. And Ed from Hartford basically saying, you guys keep talking about U.S. soccer calls one side an A team, B team, C teams for different competitions like Gold Cup. Can you explain what you mean?
Well, just that I think it's pretty obvious. The team that you saw in Nations League is the quote unquote A team. That's the team that Greg Berhalter figures when he needs to get a result against the best possible opposition, in this case, Mexico, that's who he's going to go with. Those guys play in Europe and they have preseason. And so when you have two competitions of that nature and you have a year like 2020 into 2021 and all the restrictions and issues and stress and burden and weight of this pandemic on you, you don't take both teams. We've seen this in the past, whether it be one team playing in the Gold Cup and one team playing in Copa America many, many moons ago, and Charlie Davies was down in South America for that one, or in the past, Confederations Cup versus Gold Cup. You have to make tough choices when it comes to your roster, and I think what we've said over and over about this Gold Cup is sort of explaining what this A, B, and C team is, which is who can move up that ladder within this tournament. Who can prove that they can be in the team up or in the team even above that one to get results in different conditions. So right now, these are not the players that would play if Greg had to have a must-win game and it was a FIFA window when everybody was available. But they are certainly international caliber players and they all have something huge to prove and they're in a semifinal. So I think that bodes really well for the U.S. player pool and what Greg Berhalter is building.
I think it's the 12th straight semifinal in a Gold Cup for the U.S., which Charlie got some flack for saying that it was like the U.S.'s given right.
That was back in 2000. That was like a different world.
No, I'm saying Charlie was right.
Yeah, that we missed the semifinal. I think it was 2000.
Yeah, someone came out and they emailed us and they were like, I don't know why Charlie thinks that this is our God-given right. Yeah, it's not. But the U.S. has been there every single time. This one's specifically for you, Andrew. Dominic says, hey, guys, love the show. First of all, not an Orlando City fan, but with constant rumors around DK being transferred and Tesho filling in for Akinola on the Canadian national team, I'm wondering, where is Pata? I know he had the surgery in May, and he's been training and rehabbing past 2 months. When do you think you'll see him on the pitch? Also, shout out to Benji for holding down the fort. Andrew, wasn't this your signing of the year?
Yeah, it was, because I didn't think that Daryl would ever be back, and I'm furiously searching.
Oh, so Daryl being back is why Pato's
He would have been the first choice, and then he would have been gone, and so Pato's there. I'm searching on Instagram right now. All I've got to go on is a July 14th post. Well, we've got July 5th, here's Pato training. The quads are looking pretty monstrous in that one, so it feels like probably he's maintained some strength. And then we have July 14th at the training field. It's kind of a low quality photo of just him with two thumbs up.
I love that. I love that Caleb Porter. I love that Caleb Porter started this episode by being like, "You got to watch the games. You got to pay attention." And then now Weeby's breaking down quad girth. That's like
on Instagram
as like analysis.
Yeah. I'm just looking here. I'm just trying to tell, you know, where's his fitness at? Seems like he's been able to do some leg work. That's a good sign. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Hopefully we see him soon. Orlando's had a ton of issues with availability this year. So I haven't seen the best of them. Certainly have not seen the best of what I think Pato can offer to MLS. Anything else? We got Eric Williamson stuff. Maybe throw that at you.
So
but it says David in New York. So is that you?
He spells it differently than me. So
no, he doesn't. It says it's
David.
How else do you spell it? Yeah.
It was a joke. There isn't another way to spell
What's
it.
What's the intel
I swear it wasn't me.
What's the intel on Eric Williamson between not making the Olympic qualifying squad and not playing for this team? Seems like he must be one of those guys who's bad in practice and therefore has a hard time impressing new coaches. Not sure why else he can't even get a look. Now, look, in January with Williamson, he was hurt. So that's not what's up.
It took him a while in Portland, too. I think there's
never
a level,
happened in D.C.
He didn't even get the chance. But I think there's a level of he does a lot of things well. What does he do great? And so how does he fit into a group? Right? He's not a D-mid. He's not a pure 10. So he sits in that 8 role if you're using it. And then who are his partners kind of affects how he can play. I think we've now seen enough with Portland where you know the floor with him. And it's pretty high. And so I think that's the difference than it was a few years ago where you didn't know, you know, he could show up to games and you weren't going to get anything. You don't see that anymore. So I think that's why it's confusing that he's not getting those opportunities. But again, he's with that team. He's with that group. If Busio is outperforming him, if Kellen's outperforming him in training as well as at the games, then it's a competitive field right now.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are scrapping to try and get to the end of the roster. And we're talking about 8, 9, 10 deep and young kids coming through. Caden Clark, who's not even a part of that, right? And Frankie Amaya is not a part of that. I don't know why I'm only naming Red Bulls players at this moment. So
and John Tolkien could be at left.
Right. John Tolkien could be at center mid. That kid can serve a ball.
All right.
But yeah.
Let's close it off there. Tom Boger, by the way. Just breaking news on two signings for the Union. A couple young guys out of South America and a Brazilian forward as well as a Venezuelan midfielder. So looks like a second forward, maybe a winger, and then a 6 or 8. So the Union are reinforcing. It's a transfer window time. We'll see what happens. Of course, we'll have all the news. And if you want analysis on the Gold Cup, U.S. national team win against Jamaica 1-0 on Sunday night, as well as Canada's win to move on to a semifinal against Mexico, just scroll back in the podcast feed because it's one back for you. So give that a listen. Let us know what you think. We'll be here two times again on Thursday. We'll do the MLS preview show for the weekend, and then we will do the postgame show after those semifinal matches, and then we'll have a break to get to the final as well. So stick with us. Thanks for listening. Hit us up 401-206-0MLS if you want to, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. And again, because I never say it, please rate, review, share us with your friends. If you enjoyed this show and got to this point, why not? Somebody else you know who likes soccer will like us. That's it. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll be right back.